the LED incapacitor. Sounds a little bit like the flux capacitor. Is this thing for real? I'm Paul Plack. This is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Lieberman, who is the president of Intelligent Optical Systems, a company in California which has been in the news the past couple of weeks for its new device called the LED incapacitor. We're here to find out a little bit more about this device in particular and about the company in general. Bob, thanks for taking a few minutes out to join us today.
Hi, Paul, and thanks for having me on the podcast.
All right, first of all, the USA Today article started off with the headline, "Is this a real-life lightsaber?" I can see where people might have been really alarmed by that comparison, but this device does not allow the bloodless removal of limbs. Tell us what role this device plays in the security spectrum here.
Well, actually, it's almost diametrically opposed to the lethal weapon that a lightsaber is, at least in the Star Wars series. Our device is meant in particular to allow the user to temporarily incapacitate an adversary without any lasting physical harm. So the idea is to provide the user with a way of controlling a situation that might otherwise turn ugly and require lethal force. So at its very heart, the device uses light to give an advantage to the user so that they can avoid having to use something like a lightsaber or more conventional weapon.
Right now, in its basic, in its most basic function, it has a light bright enough to distract and temporarily blind someone. But there's more to it than this, right? Because you're using particular wavelengths of light and particular pulse frequencies, which have what I guess are called psychophysical effects.
Well, yeah, the initial effect and possibly the most important effect is what's called flash blindness. Everybody has experienced it that's had a flash photograph taken where when the light is flashing in your face, you really can't see who's holding the camera. Furthermore, there's that blue spot that shows up in your field of vision after the flash bulb. That's called an after image. So flash blindness and after images are physiological effects that are very important in what we're trying to do. This would make it very hard for an adversary to approach you and do you harm. Also, even in a lethal force situation, this would make it very hard for somebody to point a weapon at you. So probably, as I said, the most important effects are actually the physiological effects in most situations. But there are also these psychophysical effects where with the colors and frequencies and intensity of light that we're using, if the adversary is intent on coming at you even after experiencing the flash blindness and after images, what we're doing is using frequencies and wavelengths that do induce or have the capability of inducing disorientation, possibly even vertigo. Some people might feel a touch of nausea, but the main effects are actually such that it makes it more and more difficult for a person to be in an adversarial position with you. I guess that's the easiest way to put it.
All right, this kind of is a new twist on the same thought that produced the taser as a weapon for police use, I think.
Yeah, there are a large number of different varieties of non-lethal weapons or less than lethal weapons, each with a different level of effect, and each has its different use. In the case of a taser, well, it's pretty obvious what tasers do to people, and that certainly has its place. In the case of pepper spray, everybody's familiar with the use of pepper spray, and there are advantages and disadvantages to that as well. You know, blowback, getting pepper spray on yourself might be a problem with tasers. There have been a number of people pointing out various problems with tasers, but as I said, each has its place. In our case, we believe that the lack of any lasting effects from this light-based weapon and the fact that it's a non-contact device given some real advantages for early use in tactical situations where you might want to maintain some standoff distance and also try to make sure that you're producing no lasting effects on your potential adversary.
All right. Now, the reason this came to attention to us at AeroNews, I think, is because it appears to have applications or interest in the Homeland Security arena. It looks like the Department of Homeland Security has offered a $1 million test grant.
Well, actually, Penn State is subcontracting to us for the testing, and fortunately, we're getting a little bit better price than you implied. But
okay.
these tests are specifically or will specifically determine the safety and efficacy of the device. That's what the tests are aimed at. Before we even expose any of the subjects, and these are all volunteers and these are all medically supervised, medically approved tests, before we even expose anybody to the light from this device, Penn State will verify that the light intensities meet safety standards so that we know there isn't going to be any lasting harm induced in the test subject. So that's a very important thing, establishing safety right at the outset, not just for the testing, but also for the device itself. But the bulk of the data taking will be to help us hone in even more specifically on the wavelengths and frequencies that we are using to make sure that this device has maximum effectiveness within its safety range.
Now, I would assume that it wouldn't get to this point unless you had developed a prototype. In fact, there was a picture in USA Today of this thing lying on a cloth, turned on, pointed away from the camera, obviously. But it looks like about the size of a flashlight. I'm trying to picture the use of this device, for example, if someone's become unruly or is attempting to hijack a plane in an airline cabin. Obviously, a much safer alternative to discharging a firearm in a pressurized cabin. But what are the possible collateral effects of people who are sitting nearby?
Well, the device is designed to be pointed specifically at the adversary. In fact, this bright flashing light reflecting off the walls of a room or you know any other interior could have some side effects, but they will be an order of magnitude or a couple of orders of magnitude less than felt by the actual object person that you're pointing this at. I should point out that while what was illustrated in the news article you're referring to was in the form factor similar to a flashlight, because we're using LEDs, we can achieve similar effects or virtually the same effects in many other different form factors. So what we've been working on now, because law enforcement is familiar with the flashlight format, we've sort of been guided by the customer to that design, but really, there are many other ways in which this could be deployed. We use LEDs in such a way that we could possibly, you know, have this in a handheld device that stands upright rather than is held straight out in front of you. The LEDs could be put in any one of a number of different configurations. So we think that the fundamental principle, using very, very bright LEDs, such as have just become available quite recently, in a situation where you can control the lighting, where you can create multiple frequencies at multiple flashing light at multiple wavelengths, really opens up a lot of possibilities for non-lethal control of tense situation.
Well, it makes me wonder if, for example, this technology couldn't be built into the walls of a likely escape corridor in a prison, or whether it could be mounted on the bottom of an aircraft to fly over a riot, or things like that. I mean, this would seem to have applications beyond even a handheld scale.
Absolutely, and depending on the objective to be accomplished, we could use more and more LEDs. We could use LEDs with different optics. Certainly, a lot of what we've brought to the table in this is system integration and particularly optical design. And in the process of developing this device that has sort of a flashlight format, we have, in fact, explored many of the formats that you've talked about and a number of others as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of flexibility here.
I'm talking with Bob Lieberman, who's the president of Intelligent Optical Systems, developer of the LED incapacitor, which has been called a lightsaber, but I think it's actually, Bob, more analogous to the device the Men in Black used in that movie. we'll be back to talk more about it in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and no ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking today with Bob Lieberman, the president of Intelligent Optical Systems. The company was in the news over the past couple of weeks for something called the LED incapacitor, which in its initial configuration, at least, is a flashlight-shaped device that could be used by security or law enforcement personnel to use light to disable an attacker, and it's going to be undergoing a test at Penn State University this fall. Bob, Intelligent Optical Systems got a big press bump out of this particular device, but you guys have a lot of other things you're working on. Tell us a little bit about the company.
Well, actually, Paul, IOS is a company that's been around for about 9 years. We have 40 dedicated people working here, of whom 13 have PhD degrees in physical and biological sciences. The company, as the name implies, is all about using light in a number of different ways. Many of our projects are related to security, but we also do a lot of work in biomedical and environmental fields as well. The LED incapacitor is one example of how we've used light to solve a problem that the government asked people to try to solve, and that is how do you control an adversary without creating lasting harm. But some of the other problems that we've been working on successfully have been related to the detection of toxic chemicals, both for environmental as well as security applications. And in fact, we're going to be installing Homeland Security-related chemical detection system in a major metropolitan area next week. We've done a great deal of work with the U.S. Departments of Energy and the Environmental Protection Agency on pollution monitoring, both in groundwater and in air. We've done some work with the Departments of Transportation and the National Science Foundation on hydrogen detection for use in next-generation automobiles. So I think many of your listeners may have heard of the Fuel Cell Car Initiative, the Freedom Car Initiative, and hydrogen-powered vehicles in general. So we've got a significant program in that direction. We have spun out a company to commercialize a biochip reader. So in the biotechnology space, we've been a player ever since really before the founding of the company. My core team was working with me in another company for 7 or 8 years before we founded iOS. Mm-hmm. So we broadly use optical techniques to solve real-world problems with high-technology applications. Much of what we do is sensing and monitoring everything, as I said, from chemicals to biomedical quantities of interest, such as anthrax spores and salmonella bacteria, and everything from structural health monitoring on bridges and vehicles to the sale of laser ultrasound detection equipment for monitoring the structural health of aircraft. We actually have a significant amount of federal money being spent right now on upgrading a product that we sell that is currently being used to monitor composite structures, and this could have aircraft applications quite soon, actually.
Now, it's interesting. You mentioned some of the grant money being spent on these things, research funding and that sort of thing. I recall back, I think it was the late 1800s when somebody who was working in the U.S. Patent Office said the office should be closed down because everything that could be invented had been invented. And I mean, looking back, that's a ridiculous thing now. But what I do see happening is it looks as though the days when the guy in his garage or his basement comes up with something that has eluded the big companies seems to be kind of a vanishing news story. We used to hear every once in a while of somebody coming up with a process or a device as a, you know, a backyard tinkerer, which was something that had escaped, you know, industry for some time. In order to develop some of these newer technologies, especially things involving, you know, light or radiation of various types, you almost have to put a company of some minimum critical mass together and seek government or other research funding for it.
Well, you know, I have to say that our company has been very fortunate in that the government has given us resources to accomplish some of our goals and of course, the nation's goals, because the government wouldn't give us money if it weren't really to the benefit of all.
Right.
But that is only marginally true. It is possible for an individual or a small group of individuals to get at least a little bit down the road and then go seek federal funding. You know, we started out as a small group of about three people. And we've now grown to a company of 40, and much of the reason that we've been able to do that has been because we've been able to convince, we think, people with a great deal of foresight within the government that the kinds of things that we were able to do were really of interest and could become practical. And we think we've borne that out in our ability to successfully spin out companies that then commercialize the devices that we come up with during our applied research phase. iOS has provided a home for a real class of entrepreneurial applied scientists. I like to say that the people that are working with me are my team of physicists and engineers and chemists and bioscientists. Each one is an entrepreneurial soul in and of himself or herself. We provide the environment that allows these people to pursue their visions with the help of government funding and with the support of our staff of technicians and administrative people here. So I have to say that the success of our company really rests on sort of the same kind of spirit that you're talking about. These people are not tinkering in their garage,
right,
but they are in their own laboratories, and really the projects that we work on for the government, each one of them starts out with the individual scientist having a vision of how to solve a particular problem and move forward. So whereas, yeah, it might be hard to just go ahead and do this in your basement, we're just one step removed from that. There really is this entrepreneurial individual spirit here, and then when the project begin to grow, as the LED and capacitor project has, we have the resources to put a larger team of people on it and move it forward, and we've been very fortunate in that.
So it's kind of the same idea. It's just a much better equipped garage.
Yeah, I think that's a very good way of putting it, actually. And you know, we've been able to expand our business about 15% per year on a steady basis, really based on the innovative ideas of our staff. You mentioned patents. I believe we now have about 30 patents granted to our people that are licensed or delegated to the company. We have a like number pending with the government, and we have many more ideas that we would love to patent if we had the resources to pay the legal talent to do it. But really, it is a quite a bracing atmosphere. We have a very international and interdisciplinary team of people here, and I got to say, I owe the success of Intelligent Optical Systems to the bright people like Dr. Vladimir Rubtsov, who's worked on the LED and capacitor, who have the vision and then the actual scientific power to realize that vision.
Intelligent Optical Systems, you can find them on the web. The website is www.intopsys.com. That's intopsys.com. and there'll be a link too from the data that comes with this AeroCast. Bob, I want to stay in touch with you as this thing rolls out, and if you get any other devices in the pipeline that look like they might have application in the aviation world, we would sure love to know about them.
Paul, we will definitely keep you up to date on this stuff, and I've got a couple of projects in mind that I would love to talk to you about later.
My guest has been Bob Lieberman, who is the president of Intelligent Optical Systems, and you've been listening to a special feature from AeroNews. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.